About a year ago, I injured my back trying to lift too much too quickly during circuit training. And after a serious battle with my mental health, which I almost lost, and numerous conversations with friends insisting I do something with the experience, Campfire has risen from the ashes like a sexy, albeit mutated, phoenix. Each week, we're going to strap on our weight belts and sink steadily into unfamiliar waters, exploring what it means to be a man, what we can do to be more vulnerable, and who to turn to in our time of need. Campfire is designed to be an open, honest dialogue consisting of personal journal entries, chats with friends who have also suffered from mental health woes, as well as interviews with high-profile figures, pioneers, and experts in the field of men's mental health awareness. Okay, crack into a fresh pair of chuddies and prepare yourself to feel some feelings. Let's get it. Hello, my dudes, and welcome back to the podcast. My name is Bobby O, and I'm pleased to welcome you once again to the safest of the safe spaces. Whether you're listening on your way to school, working out, or cooking, I hope that these conversations provide you with a bounty of value and support. So please, gather around the flames as they dance for your viewing pleasure. But remember, there's no touching in the champagne room. Without me grumbling on too much, it brings me enormous pleasure to introduce my next guest, Mr. Osher Gunsberg.
Here are the Osher facts.
Osher, formerly Andrew G, was born in London to a Czech father and Lithuanian mother. At 4 months old, Osher's parents moved initially to Adelaide and then to Brisbane. While in Brisbane, he discovered his passion for music, and more specifically, playing the bass guitar. After dipping his toes into the music industry with bands and a job in radio, it was hosting a show on the music network Channel V that made him a popular figure on television and provided him with the perfect stepping stone to host Australian Idol during the noughties. After the success of the show, he decided to move to LA to conquer the American market. However, alongside issues that had been bubbling away in the background, the lifestyle took its toll on him, and his battles with psychosis, alcoholism, and suicidal ideation were no longer things he could ignore. With the appropriate support and determination to get healthy and sober, Osher returned to Australia and began hosting the immensely popular reality TV show The Bachelor. He has since cemented himself as a mainstay of Australian popular culture. I'll be back at the end to chew your ear off, but for now, please accept this rose of oral deliciousness. Recorded on October 22, 2020, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Osher Gunsberg.
One moment. Are we filming this?
We're not filming. Cool. Don't worry. Just okay, the dulcet tones of your voice, if that's all right.
Sir. Okay, good. Because I've just finished training and I'm still in my workout gear.
That's quite all right. It's quite all right. So you're sporting the Brisbane something? This is how poor my AFL knowledge is.
Not AFL.
Oh, here we go.
Can you read that?
Australian Ultimate League.
Do you know what that is?
What is that, sir?
You know what Ultimate is?
No.
It
is an extraordinary sport. It's frisbee. It's kind of like rugby league with frisbee.
That sounds brutal.
Self-refereed. That's the really, really interesting thing about the entire sport is there's no referee. So every single player on the field has this level of, I have to do the right thing because I'm accountable and they are accountable. And it's fascinating to watch. Even at the highest level, world championships, nation versus nation, there's no referee. And each team will play in a way that respects the rules. And it is extraordinary to understand that a sport can actually have that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Fascinating.
And how often do you do that?
I don't do it at all. A buddy of mine owns the company that makes shirts. I met him when I was going to school in Amsterdam. When I was going to school in Amsterdam, I met him, and he's like the guy that, like, I guess it's like the Lorna Jane of Ultimate. You know, they are the outfitter for Ultimate because you do a lot of diving, and so you scuff up your forearms a lot, and so they've got all kinds of really specialist apparel for people to wear when they play this game. And he knew that I'd done some work in Brisbane, and he's like, I sponsor a team down there, and so he sent me this shirt and they signed it, which is nice. So there you go.
Well, there you go.
Number 10 Here we are. Anyway, how are you, man? You good?
Yeah, I'm so good. Oh, actually, do you know what? I've been answering that question like that, like it doesn't matter. And the whole point of campfire is to be honest.
Yeah,
I'm pretty, like, I've done a lot of pacing this morning. In just because obviously you're you and I'm me, and I was just very aware that I wanted to make sure that this went swimmingly. And otherwise, life is good. Other than that, I had a very deep meditation this morning, which served me very well for the podcast. I went for a beautiful walk and took in the sunshine over North Bondi. And I'm feeling pretty good, feeling like there are a lot of things that I could complain about, but I won't.
Oh, look, that sounds great. And don't worry at all, mate. It's fine. We're just people talking.
Yeah.
It's fine.
So I don't know how much you know about what I'm trying to do and, you know, that kind of stuff, but I'll give you a tip.
Hit me, Rob. What have you got?
Well, what I'll do is, so the idea of...
I've read you one. I said yes because I read your thing, so I'm here. So if you want to get stuck in, let's get stuck in.
Well, look, it's not some... I mean, getting stuck in on this podcast is just the two of us having a bit of a waffle. So there's no agenda, and there's certainly... And it's not going to be me just sat here grilling you. I think the real value that you can provide is... You've obviously got an enormous wealth of experience in the mental health space and beyond that. Is that me? Oh, that is me. I apologize.
Okay.
That's the ex-girlfriend. She's ringing to say good luck with you.
Is that your ex-girlfriend?
Yeah. Who I actually, well, I'll give you, like, in terms of the conversation, like, I obviously want to focus on you, but... We can talk about my experience at the end.
Your show, do whatever you want.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. Let's talk about me. Cool. But yeah, it's just supposed to be a random waffly chat about, you know, men and sort of connecting with our feelings and not feeling ashamed.
You got it, man.
Cool.
Let's go. Right.
Well, let me set you up. Okay. Give me a moment. Here we go. Okay. Osha, welcome to the warmth of Campfire Conversations. As you know, I'm on a crusade to normalize difficult chats amongst gentlemen. My objective is to stick a metal fork in the toaster of men's mental health and take a big bite of the ashy burnt toast of discomfort. With any luck, it might encourage others to do the same. Now, before we oil each other up with the salubrious and far less salubrious man feelings, I want to take a moment to give you a proper introduction. So for the benefit of my audience around the world, you've been a staple on Australian TV for many, many years now, hosting music programs on the dearly departed Channel V. You announced Guy Sebastian as Australia's winner of the first Pop Idol. And more recently, you've become the shining beacon of light on The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, and The Bachelor in Paradise. 2 years ago, you dropped your book, Back After the Break, which I have been diligently devouring, that contains a lot that I'd like to draw upon in today's conversation. And if that wasn't enough, you're also cranking out two podcasts, Better Than Yesterday and Dad Pod. The former talks extensively about your journey that you've been on with your mental health, and the latter focuses on a new understanding of what it is to be a modern father. Now, I apologize for doing your CV a little disservice, but there was a lot to distill, and I would like to get motoring without me waffling on too much. Now, the last I heard, you were on Josh Rezep's podcast, and you were putting the finishing touches to your mattress/pillow fortress in an apartment in Melbourne during the lockdown.
Yes, so, I was.
How the devil are you, sir?
I'm back in my home. Well, I'm grateful to be here. I'm back in my home in Sydney with my family, which is lovely. I have a lot of empathy and a lot of solidarity with the people of Melbourne, and indeed anyone around the world who is in the middle of a coronavirus-inspired lockdown. It's quite tricky, and it, in my experience, it brought up a lot of quite intense reactions in my body. And so there's a lot that we can do to take care of that. But just the never-ending, it feels in Melbourne particularly, the never-ending feeling of uncertainty is really tricky to deal with. And I think that's something that, you know, I've done a couple of corporate quizzes, like I hosted like a silly game show for corporate clients. It's really quite fun. And I've done a couple of them in the last few weeks. And whenever we cross to someone in Melbourne, there's a difference in their body language. There's a difference in the look in their eye and you can see it, man. It's like, man, it's tough. It's bloody tough. So yeah, I'm grateful to be home. I'm grateful to be around the kids and my wife is incredible and my dogs are barky idiots, but yeah, you can't have everything, Rob.
You can't, mate. Now, during those quizzes, are you able to offer any sort of words of encouragement or is it literally like turn up, do the gig and say good luck?
No, look, I think like anything, like any conversation, it's like I look at it like when I'm taking my eldest, when I'm driving her to school. You know, I'll tell you this, like no teenager will ever do anything you say. Now, listen, Rob, what I'd like you to do is this. If you're 15, you'll be like, and fuck you.
I'm still sort of like that.
Exactly the opposite. So it's just like trying to relate to, oh, yeah, well, you know, well, what worked for me when, you know, I just generally tend to ask them about their days. Like, how are you going? You all right? You got a bit of a routine going there? So, yeah. When I was in lockdown, I tried to make sure that I got up at the same time every day and, you know, gave my body the gift of the hormones I needed to shift mood states through the day by exercising really quite hard in the morning. And that really helped get a lot of the energy out. Well, that's what worked for me anyway. What's for lunch? And then ask them what's for lunch and, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, I think it's like any of the podcasts that I do. If you're particularly instructional, I come from nowhere. I know nothing. You know, I have no degree in anything. I can only share with you what worked for me and, you know, take what works and, you know, discard what doesn't. But, you know, I think the general rules are the same for everyone. You got to take responsibility for your side of the street. You got to be willing to put the work in and understand that you can only control yourself and how you feel about things. You can't control anything else. And that's really the start and the end of it for me.
So speaking of the start and the end of it, where should we start on our waffly ramble chat? Is there anything? Well, listen, we can go in any direction you like. I guess a good place to start is, as I say, I've been camping out with this young fellow on my bed for the past few. Hello.
Oh, yeah. It's my book. Yeah.
It's your book. Yeah. So in the book, you talk about struggles with anxiety, panic attacks, weight issues since you were young, trying for years to drink away your pain that you were suffering. You ended up unemployed, divorced, suicidal, and certifiable on the other side of the world, I think. Yet somehow you managed to put yourself back together and make a life for yourself again. So it's been a couple of years since the memoir. How are you doing now?
Now I'm okay now. And I think we're just in maintenance mode, you know, like anything really. You know, I had quite a rough trot there. And you mentioned that, I just did what every red-blooded Australian male had been doing for years. And, you know, I reached for the nearest, you know, if I felt edgy or on edge or anxious or nervous or whatever, I just reached for the nearest socially acceptable self-administered sedative that I could find, which is alcohol. And no one really minds. There's cricketers on TV selling it to me, and apparently girls in bikinis just appear whenever I crack a six-pack. And so, brilliant, this should sort everything out. It didn't, and the dosage of that drug that I needed just got higher and higher and higher until eventually the dosage that I needed to feel at all normal or not worried or accepted or anything just became utterly unsustainable. And it's really easy, you know, to think that you've got it under control and you can self-manage it. I remember vividly speaking these words out of my mouth to my doctor who was trying to save my life, going, mate, I'll just have it. I don't need your meds. I'll just have a couple of beers and I'll be fine. You know, but that is absolutely, that's the that's the addiction talking. That's the rationalization. Any addict will rationalize away their behavior, you know. That's totally fine. Like, I'm just going to sit at this poker machine until it hits. It's fine. I can sit here. It's fine. It makes perfect sense. I'm just sitting here. I'm not drinking. I'm just sitting here at the poker machine and it'll pay. It'll pay. It'll pay. An addict will always rationalize their behavior because, you know, your ego wants to protect itself. And, you know, I remember that. You know, I remember that very, very vividly. So I was pretty lucky actually that I got sober before I got really sick. Because if I had gotten sick while I was still drinking, it would have been, I wouldn't be here, really, quite simply. I wouldn't be here. I would have just got a case of the fuckets and gone. And I think it's really important to watch out for the fuckets because they will come and creep up on you. You can get the fuckets around a half-empty tub of ice cream, you know. You can get the fuckets about whether or not you're going to text that ex that you're a bit of a dick to, but you're feeling kind of lonely and you know it's probably not going to be, you know, too much of a challenge to get him or her to come over. You know, you can get the fuckets about a lot of things. So, you know, it's important to watch out for those things in your life. And so that's what I do every day. I've got to be really careful to watch out for the fuckets, particularly around eating. I still have... you know, there's still, I've got to watch out for compulsive eating in my life. That's around. And I've got to watch out for, you know, compulsive behavior, which is all avoidance stuff, you know, stuff to avoid feeling, stuff to avoid connecting with the people that I love and who love me. But, you know, that just means you've got to do things to, you know, you've got to be disciplined. I mean, if you were going to, back in the day before cars, if you wanted to get somewhere, you had to take a horse, right? And so you don't just get on the horse. You've got to go and take the horse from the stable. You've got to go put the saddle on the horse. You've got to do it up properly. You've got to put the bridle on. You've got to make sure you've got the right boots on. You've got to make sure the horse is fed and watered. You've got to do all these kind of things before you can get on with your day. Similarly, I have to make sure that I get everything done before I can get into my day. I've got to make sure that there's been meditation in the morning. I've got to make sure that there's been written work in the morning. I've got to make sure that I've connected with people in the morning. Absolutely have to make sure that I have touched and connected with somebody human that I love before I have touched my phone. And then I've got to be sure that I get some training in. I have to. It can be as little, I've got a routine that I can get done in 20 minutes, and that'll smoke me. But it's super important for me to release the hormones into my body that allow me to shift mood states throughout the day. And it's extraordinary when you think about, you know, that we have that, everything we need, if our brains are healthy, everything we need is already inside us, but you, like an orange, you've got to kind of squeeze it to get the juice out. Right. And so it could mean like a really brisk walk. It could be some air squats, you know, if wherever your level of fitness is at. It's just enough to do nothing but connect with your body, move your body and feel your body move and feel that dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine and endorphin just release. And then later through your day, what you've got is you've got these reserves of these in these hormones, particularly norepinephrine, which is the thing that allows you to, you know, that gives you more resilience. And if I don't do that, I know it. All right. But if I do that, the day is so much easier. It's just so much easier to deal with, you know, things that are a punish, whatever that may be, a school zone when you're late or whatever, you know, someone calling you don't want to speak to, or, you know, you've forgotten to do something and your partner's picked you up on it. You know, that's the difference between biting back and going, you're right, sorry. You know, that's really important. And you've got to take responsibility for that. Well, sorry, I have to take responsibility for that. I know that I need these things, to not be so much of a punish to the people around me. And so what was today? I've got, just to cut down on travel, I've got a bunch of stuff here at the house. It's got a, you know, a collection of kettlebells, and I found sandbags really good. I really like my sandbags.
So yeah. Before we go too far down the training route, I know that you've been smashing cycling on Twitch, and my friend Dave is very upset that you've basically encouraged him to buy all the gear for his house now. He's like, I've been following him on Twitch and I've got to buy all the gear. But before we move on, I just want to loop back to sort of what you mentioned about medical professionals. Now, one of the things that stood out to me when I was reading was that when you talk about people to reach out to, I noticed that you didn't mention so much your friends or your family. It was more like the mentors or the medical professionals that were chipping in. Now, I wanted to understand if that was by design or that you weren't confident enough to have those chats or you didn't feel that that was appropriate.
I did reach out to, I did reach out to my family, but it became pretty evident pretty quickly that what was like the first, I remember when I got really, really sick, the first person I reached out to was my mentor. And the first thing he said to me was like, what's going on with you is way above my ability, way above. You need a medical, you need help right now, right now. It's the difference between I know how to put on a Band-Aid, but I can't give you sutures. No idea. You're going to have to go to a doctor for that bit. Like, I can Band-Aid it. Yeah, sure. I might be able to get a lot of Elastoplast or even put on a butterfly stitch if I need to, but you actually need the little curvy needle and the little clips. And I cannot do that. So, yeah, it was, I was at a point where I needed a lot more help than anyone that I knew could give me. And I knew that, you know, I'm not going to, if I've, I don't know, I have a, it's a really lovely little electric car. It's a little Nissan. It's great. But it's extraordinarily complicated. You know, there's so much software and bits and pieces on board. It's like a, you need a lab coat to work on it. So I'm not going to get the bloke with the van, you know, who comes down my street knocking on the door going, do you want me to service a car? He's not going to be able to fix it because it's like you need to plug in a, you know, mainframe quantum computer to fix the damn thing, which is brilliant. But, yeah, you got to you don't. I'm not going to do that, you know. So I wouldn't want to burden my mates with that either, you know, because I think that's also important is if you've got to take responsibility for what's going on. Like if you've got to put it as a broken leg, right? If you had a broken leg, you wouldn't go to one of your mates going, yeah, I've got this broken leg. Nah, I don't want to go to the doctor. Nah, it'll be all right. I'll have a few beers. It'll be sweet. Your mates will be like, mate, you are in a lot of trouble. You really need to see a doctor. This is weird. Your foot is at the wrong angle and you can't walk properly and it's freaking me out. You're stinking up the place because you can't shower. You need to see a doctor. No, I'll be right. She'll be right. Just give me another beer. I'll be right. Like your mates would think you're an idiot if you don't go and see someone of the level of competence required to deal with the problem you've got. And it's too much of a burden for you. Like your mates aren't going to be able to fix it. Like,
maybe just to just give me a hint. Pick that analogy apart a bit. I think that half the problem is that we go from having a small graze on our leg and our mates aren't necessarily aware that the graze could turn into a broken leg. And I think that that's where I think it's important to, like, if the cut is a small chat, just to be like, hey, I'm not feeling that great. And your mate goes, oh, mate, I'm totally ill-equipped to deal with a graze. See you later. And then it ends up as a broken leg. Did that, sense?
Bear in mind, I presented as an acute case. Mm. I presented as someone who was in a shitload of trouble, a lot of trouble. All right. So I had a compound fracture of the brain. Mm. All right. It was bone sticking out. Like I was in a heap of trouble and it was well beyond the capacity of anybody that I knew personally to help. Mm. But that's not to say that if you're having if you just had a bit of a bump that a mate can't help you out. That's absolutely true. But I think it's important that you recognize that the smart thing to do, think about it like your car, like anything. The smart thing to do is like, no, I don't know how to fix this. Nobody I know how to fix this. Nobody I know knows how to fix this. I'm going to go talk to someone who does. And then, because you wouldn't put your family in a car that a bloke down the pub helped you repair and then drive to Canberra at 100 k's an hour. No way. You'd be like, I don't feel so good about that guy. I'm going to wait till I get a professional because I don't want one of the wheels to fly off at 100 k's an hour with my family in the car. Similarly, you wouldn't want, you know, to act on advice or something like if you were in an acute situation. But, you know, it's very important to keep in touch with everybody, the other people around you and also know what to listen for if you're another man, to know what to listen for. And there's a lot of things you can do. You don't have to have the answers. There's, in my opinion, you can ask a lot of questions and it's simply like, you know, well, okay, well, what's your role in the situation? What responsibility can you take here? What are you seeing that you don't realize you're seeing that gives you the story that you're reacting to? All right. That's a really important thing as well. You know, because everyone at work thinks I'm this, and this particular guy is always taking credit for the things I've done. It's like, all right, then is there evidence? You know, try and break it down, try and pick out the facts and try and challenge, you know, it might be uncomfortable for the other person to listen to, but it's important to be open to the fact that our perceptions will give us our reality, and we need to take responsibility for how we're seeing things. And when our brains are healthy, we have the opportunity to challenge those perceptions. We have the opportunity to reframe them. I've been in a situation where my brain has not been able to, despite all the challenges that I tried to put it at, my brain was not able to comprehend. So it wouldn't have mattered if someone had said, oh, sure, it's fine. Everything's fine. It wouldn't have stuck. It wouldn't have touched the sides. It wouldn't have made a lick of difference. But when our brains are mostly healthy, we have the ability to challenge those things. But it takes guts to go, maybe I've got this wrong. Maybe I'm seeing this not right. Maybe this person isn't taking credit. Maybe I'm not pulling my weight in this project. Maybe it's the other way around. You know, you've got to have the guts to look at your role in the situation. And, you know, that's the thing that a mate can do for another mate, is just to kind of help them break it apart and go, okay, like, say, for example, there's something really big that they're worried about. It's like, break it down. All right, then. Okay. So that's the thing. That's the thing you're worried about, or the first thing that's keeping you up at night. Okay. Let's break it apart. What is there any part of it that we, you know, can control? What can we control here? All right, then. What's our part in changing that? Can we take responsibility for the things we have to look at and change and how we see it? All right, then, is there any part of this that we cannot control? All right, then, well, how can we be in acceptance of that and adapt to those new circumstances so that we can still act in accordance with our values? Okay. All right, great. And then you can help a mate talk through something that they're stuck on quite well. If it's something like, you know, in your words, a scratch or a graze. But if they come, you know, like I was, grabbing you by the shoulders and screaming in your face and trying to warn you that the world is ending, yeah, you're probably going to need to get him to a doctor.
One of the things you said in the book was that there was a desire to control others' imagined perceptions over you, overriding any kind of self-care.
Yeah.
Now, have you moved beyond that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I still deal with it. It's a... I'm not going to say I don't hear voices. I want to be very, very clear like that. But the analogy I will use, that it is like the tradies at the house next door hearing their little battery powered radio. You know, it's just kind of there. It's kind of there. And you know, in the States, they all the call signs, like here in Australia, the call signs are, if you're in Queensland, it's 4JJJ. In Sydney, it's 2JJJ. In Melbourne, it's 3JJJ. Like, the number is the state. In America, it's K for the West Coast and W for the East Coast for some stupid reason. I have no idea. So there used to be this phrase that I had my brain tuned to K-fuck radio, which is KFUK, which is like, you're a fucking idiot, just so you know, and you look fat in that. And welcome back to this K-Fuck Radio. And today, Osha's fat fuck, and the t-shirt looks really bad on him. And he's talking shit out of his ass on this podcast. And later on, he'll be talking about himself a lot more, and the narcissist will come out. And you have to go, okay, mate, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that you're doing that, but I'm going to go over here. And you just kind of have to be aware of it, you know. I don't think it's ever going to go away. It's just there.
And what are the tools? What are the sort of mental sort of devices that you use in order to block that radio station out?
I think the number one, you can't block it out, because the more you try and push things away, the bigger they get. And that's a really important thing. That goes for fear. That goes for resentment. That goes for everything. It's like the opening scene of Raiders of the Lost Ark when he's running away from that boulder, you know. Every time, if you're running away from it, if you're pushing it away by running from it, or you're trying to push it, every time you look back at it, it'll get bigger and closer. So you just have to be with slipping to the side and allowing it to go past. You just have to be with it. Let it wash over you. Be like what's his face in June. Let the fear pass over you and through you. And when you turn around and look, only I will will remain. It's that incredible quote, but it's true. But your brain has to be healthy for that to happen. Like, there was a time when my brain wasn't, and I needed a fair amount of meds to get me there. So I would say noticing is probably the most powerful tool. And it's really simple. You just say, I'm noticing at the start of whatever it is. I'm noticing I'm nervous. And by doing that, you instantly split between the emotion and you. And you observe the situation. And by being the observer, it's now no more than a bumper sticker on a car in front of you. You know, oh, all right. And that bumper sticker says, you know, Gavin at work is a self-aggrandizing bastard. That's interesting. Is he? I wonder. Huh. Is that just the way I see it? Huh. Rather than, no, he is, and everything. You're like, as soon as you say, I'm noticing, that splits it. I'm noticing I'm afraid. I'm noticing I'm angry. I'm noticing I'm can't stop thinking about this guy or girl, and I'm so in love with them, you know? And then it allows you to then kind of assess and have a bit of space between you and that thought. So just that's what I would say start with. I'm noticing.
Yeah, I think that's something that I definitely don't do, but something that would certainly help myself in the way that I approach things. I'm still very much still on my journey to manage and maintain my mental health and make sure that it doesn't kick me in the ass. And yeah, like the analogy of a radio station is definitely something that I can relate to. There's often times where I'm just like, you shouldn't be doing this podcast. You're an idiot. What are you doing? Nobody wants to talk to you. You're a jackass. But a sort of mild segue into my next question is that one of the things that really rang true for me while reading the book was this idea of the universe providing. And if you'd asked me last year if I thought that that would be something that I'd be open to, I would have told you to get stuffed. What a silly notion. But the more and more I've believed in that and allowed myself to take the foot slightly off the pedal and allow the universe to provide, the better the results have been. And I just wondered if you still believe that.
So it can be a bit of an airy-fairy notion. This idea of if I will myself a new BMX, a BMX will arise. And
the BMX, do want a new BMX.
The universe will provide me with a BMX. No, I don't want a new BMX. I'd like a new look. It's always N plus one, mate. It's always one more bike than you need and one less bike than you want. It's the way bicycles work. It's like bicycles, surfboards, and cameras. It's the same thing. I definitely feel that if you have a intention of outcome in your heart, whether that be I am, and you're open to that intention coming around. I see myself with a life where I'm fit and I'm healthy and, you know, I have great health outcomes. And every time I sit in the doctor's chair and they do my blood pressure, they go, wow, well, it's really good for a bloke your age. If you have that in your heart, you will, if you put it deep enough in, tiny little micro decisions throughout the day, every day of your life will slowly bring you around to that. And that goes to deciding whether or not to have another piece of toast with that much jam on it, or maybe I won't have that many beers tonight, or, you know, whatever you're choosing to eat. And like, no, I'll get up and train because I'm the kind of, you know. And then sure enough, when you're sitting in the doctor's office in 6 months and they go, damn, that blood pressure's pretty low for a bloke your age, you're like, oh. You can't say the universe provides. You're like, no, well, you know, that's what it is. And so I put it to you that if you have you've got to have your why deep enough. All right. If you get stuck anywhere else, you've got to have, why am I doing this? You know, why do I want to be, for example, why do I want to, you know, have make healthy lifestyle choices? I want to make healthy lifestyle choices because I'm nearly 50 and I've got a 1-year-old son and a 16-year-old stepdaughter, and I want to be vibrant and vital and a part of their lives and able to help them in their journey for as long as I possibly can. I know how much running around I have to do for my 16-year-old. I'm going to be 61 when my son is that age. I want to be there. I want to be able to do exactly what I'm doing now for him. And that's my why. And that informs everything. And that informs like, and so if you've got your why, everything becomes easy. Everything becomes simple. Everything becomes, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to train. It's a pleasure to lift really heavy things that hurt. It's a pleasure to sit there and feel the DOMS. It's a pleasure to, you know, not eat a particular way. It's great because it's servicing the why. And, if you get your why dialed in, things just happen, man. Things just happen because your subconscious makes all these decisions along the way and helps you get there. And that, some may say the universe provides, some may use another word that's got one syllable.
Let's not go there. Let's not go down that route.
Hey, humans will justify all kinds of reasons, but the best that I can ascertain through my own personal experience is this: there's no bloke with a beard in the sky who's done these things. It's habitual patterns of behavior that I have worked into my routine, based upon a why, for an outcome that will be ultimately in service of others. And that seems to make everything happen.
Just to play devil's advocate on that, I think perhaps that this comes from a certain position of privilege, maybe. I mean, I certainly feel that with my mental health and the way in which I've been able to work through it and the results and the events of the past 3 months and 4 months. But I wonder, how do we tell a father with three kids and a wife and probably tons more responsibility than myself, that has lost a job due to COVID, to trust in the universe? Do you think, how do I effectively encourage those kind of people to trust in the universe and figure out their why?
Understand that you're a carbon-based life form. Every single atom of carbon in your body came from a star. You are the universe. You are an inextricable part of the universe. You are made of stars. You are actually the very atoms that make up the cells in your body were once in a star a trillion million light years away. And you are made of the universe. Therefore, you are a part of the universe. And it's just reframing what is the universe, you know. I think it's foolish personally to trust in some greater, bigger, you know, this will all reframe what, if you have to use the word the universe, what is the universe? The universe is my community, me and my community. If I tell enough people in my community, you know what, I'm not drinking anymore, then the universe provides a party that I go to that no one asks me if I want a beer. You just reframe what the word the universe means. Mm. And yeah, you want to talk privilege? I was born white, straight, male, middle class to, you know, into a safe country. And my parents then immigrated to another safe country, but no one gave a fuck that I'm an immigrant because I'm white. You know, it's like, damn, I'm dripping. I won the lotto, you know, I'm dripping in it. And I can't ignore that. And yet this is my experience and I can't have any other experience. Mm. I don't know what it's like to be anything but this. I can only share with you what worked for me. And hopefully some of the things that work for me may be applicable to your life, but I definitely get that. You know, what it is to walk through the world as a white man is very different to walk through the world as anything else. Mm-hmm. And that all the things I was able to do to help myself get better did start in that foundation.
And speaking of that foundation, are you able to stay humble with it?
Oh, there was a time in my life when I was anything but. I think there's a great phrase that I love in the sobriety community: find humility before humility finds you. And humility came to find me kicking and screaming, had to drag me out from under the coffee table, and beat me in the street in front of all of my friends. And I ended up unemployed and paying rent out of my savings. Couldn't get a job, couldn't get arrested. I could probably get arrested in America. It's pretty easy. Couldn't get a job. No one wanted to employ me. I couldn't, you know, I was running out of money. I was paying rent out of my savings, and yet only 2 years before I was the host of the highest rated TV show in the country. And I think once you've had your career vanish from underneath your feet and all these financial obligations pile upon you and you're having to then liquidate assets to pay that and understand, fuck, I'm 40 and I've totally fucked up my finances and I've only got a few years left of active work life. What the fuck am I going to do? once you've had that experience, you're like, okay, every day that I get paid to work is a privilege, and all I'm going to try and do is be as professional as I possibly can be, because it is as being is in being as professional as I possibly can be every day that I am not only enjoying every day, but I'm also doing my very best to help this perpetuate. And if it doesn't perpetuate, then I've enjoyed every day. And that's all there is to it, man. It's different to how it used to be. But I would encourage you to find humility before humility finds you, because you don't want it. Humility doesn't give a shit.
One of the main questions that we want to address on the podcast is how we as men help facilitate courageous conversations. And I just wondered if there was anything in your wheelhouse that you had come across, or things that have worked for yourself in order to facilitate those conversations.
I guess ask questions when someone tells you about, you know, how they're going. You know, I've got a buddy that's really good at it. He's freaking awesome. You know, his follow-up question when I tell him, you know, something that's bothering me, his follow-up question is empathy. Like, oh, like basically validating the question. Oh, that must be really tough, because you'd be thinking about this and that and the other and such and such and such. So straight away I feel validated. Then he says, what's your part in it? And so at the same time, I am being validated for, yeah, this complaint that I have, that sounds like it's a real complaint. And then someone I trust and love is going, okay, but what's your role in this situation? And your role in this situation could, say, for example, you're in a relationship, or you're in a job that you hate, or, you know, your relationship that's not working out. Part of that responsibility is, like, you've chosen to be there. You've chosen to stay there. You have a choice. We live in a free country of Australia. We have an extraordinary, you know, welfare system, and we have free healthcare. We are very, very lucky. And so it's a heck of a parachute, rip cord to pull. But we all have the opportunity to go, you know what? No, I don't have to be here. I'm going to go. So even that is that, like, if you've got a job and a boss that's you know, riding your tail, and, you know, it's just really bad, you know, you have the opportunity to say, okay, I'm not going to work here anymore. And you will figure it out. You've been employed before. You'll get employed again. You know, and so that's really good. When he asks me, you know, what's your part in it? You kind of, okay. Because when we look at the things that we are in control of, it then gives us that locus of control. Like, what's your part in it could be, well, I see this person, or I allow this person to infuriate me. That's our part. Our part is allowing this person to infuriate us, where we could be like, okay, I instead of me being infuriated by this person, I might feel sorry for this person, because this person feels that they have to bully others all day at work to get what they need, or to feel safe in themselves. And that's, you know, I can only look at them with empathy and pity or whatever. So that's a really good follow-up, because then once we start taking control of the things we can, it makes us feel so much more like exactly that, in control. We're like, oh, right, so these are the things I can control. Control the controllables, accept what you can't. You know, if you just do those two things, it's a massive leap ahead. And I think when you're talking with another friend, just try and understand, if you're trying to talk them through whatever's going on with them, try and pick apart those two things, control the controllables. And one of the controllables is how you look at the world. And bear in mind, if their way that they see the world is rigid, if they're unable to see another point of view, it's definitely time to go and perhaps see a medical professional, because we should have flexible thinking. We should be able to see things from different points of view. We should be able to see and consider things from the other side. And if we're stuck, that can be a problem, and rigid thinking can lead to much greater issues later on.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And what you said about packing in a job that wasn't right for you, I can completely relate. And that's pretty much how we've got to a position of campfire and having these bold, amazing conversations, having gone from having no bold, amazing conversations and just suffering in silence for about 6 or 7 months. So it's
really important. When I quit my radio job, because I had to, when I quit my radio job, I'd make the joke, Like, yeah, look, it's amazing. I've got twice the time, but half the money. But, you know, I just had to trust that in that space, something else would show up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it did.
So I'm conscious of the time and, you know, I'll just ask you a couple of questions so that we can wrap up and you can get back to smashing it on Twitch again.
I need to shower because the next one I'm filming so I need to shower and be looking nice by 11. I'm going to have to go pretty soon.
Okay. Yeah. No worries. No worries at all. It's been an absolute privilege to have a chat with you. I just wondered if you could, let's end by, I'll ask you some advice. And someone, let's call him Robert, that has struggled with accepting love and struggles with the concept of commitment. Do you have any advice for him?
The only thing that the thing you deny yourself from not, look at it from the other end. What's it called? I can't remember what it's called. Via negativa. Look at it from the other way. What do you get if you don't commit? You get this sense of safety. You get a sense of your ego reinforcing that sense of safety. I won't go for this job. I won't send this CV and I won't go for this job because, you know, I'm not that good. And if I get rejected, it'll make me feel that I'm never that good. So I'll stay right safe down here. I'll be fine. Or I won't ask this person, this man or woman out on a date because I don't think I'm in their league. And, you know, if they reject me, then I don't think I'll ever feel good about myself. And so I'm safe right here, not asking them. Whew, that was lucky. Safer. And it's underlined that. And it goes in a spiral. And it starts to make that groove in your brain even more rigid and you're unable to get out of it. By denying yourself commitment, you're denying yourself growth. Nothing. You don't grow if you don't commit. You have to commit. You have to commit. You want to learn about commitment? Go and watch Free Solo with Alex Honnold climbing up El Capitan.
That is epic.
No ropes. Mate, that's commitment. Mm. Right. You want to watch commitment? Watch Lane Beachley paddling into Chopu. Which is a surf break in Tahiti that breaks over about 120 centimeters of seawater over nothing but fire coral, which will actually tear your face off, which has happened. And you basically paddling into a near 90 degree face when you switch from the paddle to standing on your board, and it's, you know, 3 meters straight down. That's commitment. All right. But what do you get out of that commitment? You get growth. You get to change who you are. You get to have a fundamentally different experience of the world. Whatever you are fearing that is stopping you committing, whatever you're fearing that is stopping you from committing is only going to get more frightening. It's only going to get bigger and it's only going to get heavier and it's going to get eventually too heavy for you to even lift. So by committing and facing whatever it is, commitment is just not fear of, like, commit, not wanting to commit is just fear. All right. And it's only in being with the fear. And similarly to lifting a weight, Rob, right? If you were to go to a gym, I don't know, if people may not go to the gym, but they're aware that if you start at the gym, you might be able to do a bicep curl with a 5 kilo weight, right? You do that for a couple of weeks and then you go, you know, it's actually feeling pretty light because your body's adapted to the stress. And you go up to the 7 kilo weight and you go, oh, this is a little heavier. And then, you know, after a couple of weeks, you're like, actually, it's not that heavy anymore. And you go up to the 10 kilo weight. Oh, this is a bit heavier. And then after a couple of weeks, your body adapts to the stress. So similarly, it's only with being with the discomfort of the fear that you will get over that. Your body will adapt to the stress. And you're denying yourself growth. You're denying yourself the full, rich experience of what it is to be human if you don't commit to whatever it is. So just fucking do it.
Hey, I need to. That's exactly where I'm at. And you've hit a few home truths. So thank you realize that you're right. It's, I am denying myself the full spectrum of emotion. And yeah, I try and put a bit of a barricade up against things like that. So yeah, look, I'm as with most of us, we're a work in progress, aren't we? So slowly catchy monkey, as they say. But listen, I'm very conscious of the time, but I want to thank you ever so much for your honesty and your openness. It sounds like you are doing everything you can to tackle your mental health and live an authentic, rich and fulfilling life.
I do my best, man. Day at a time. Day at a time.
That's it. Well, right. Listen,
I really got to go.
I gotta say goodbye because you need to go and wash. I'll speak to you again sometime soon. Take care.
See you, man. Good luck with it. Bye.
You. Am I glad that one is done? Osha was my golden goose for season one, and hopefully it wasn't too apparent that I soiled myself a few times in anticipation of this interview. It's testament to his awesomeness that he wanted to be part of a largely unknown entity at its inception and throw his voice behind what we're trying to achieve. I can't thank him enough, but one more time won't hurt. Thank you, Osha. And I hope that we can continue to share our experiences with one another further down the line. For anyone interested in Osha's podcasts or watching him smash ridiculous fitness goals on Twitch, check out the podcast description for all the links. Some of the super sharp-eared of you out there would have noticed a few drops in the sound recording. Apologies for that on behalf of the National Broadband Network. The internet is still considered a luxury item here in Australia, so please bear with me until I'm rich enough to afford some proper studio time. At Campfire, we recognise that difficult chats are often like those erections you used to get in maths class. Not expected, not convenient, and not cool. We hope that by listening to the podcast, you'll feel better equipped to own the moment and breeze into your next courageous conversation with confidence. If you or a loved one is struggling with their mental health, don't suffer in silence. There are some superb resources available, such as mensline.org.au and Beyond Blue, who both want to help everyone in Australia achieve their very best mental health. If you'd like to connect with them, myself, or Campfire, links, as always, will be in the description. But for now, I must bid you a fond au revoir. Until next time, stay happy and healthy, my dudes!